This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Situation at Bar Canada as we welcome you in midweek Wednesday for the big guy, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. Dustin hanging out right outside of Bar Canada. Bartender 2 is in today with the Waters. We'll get to that coming up in just a bit. Developing story, as is the developing story in Game 3 of the NBA Finals. We've waited 72 hours, not much more to go. Of course, will he or won't he? That is the question, big guy. Kristaps Porzingis. Now, DraftKings is sitting 3. It was 2.5 yesterday when we left the program. That would lead you to believe, off the one opener, Celtics immediately hit through 0 to the Mavs to 1. Then got to 1.5, then got to 2, then dipped back to down to 1.5. And then what happened was we had the announcement of Porzingis jumped all the way up to 2.5. Now we're sitting 3. And I don't know necessarily if anybody has an answer on what's happening with Porzingis. You've seen the total come down just a little bit, 213.5 at DraftKings. You can find a 214.5 in the market right now. But we are going to keep you abreast of the situation that is Porzingis over the next 3 hours. We should hear something. I hope we hear something because, again, we are that undertaker popping up out that casket. But listen, even if you don't have a futures ticket on the Mavs, like the big guy and your boy, okay? Even if you're not betting the Mavs tonight, what you're hoping for is June, the month of. You want this thing to be extended. We want some more basketball, even those of you that bitch about it. Last night was lonely. Like, if you weren't with somebody Netflixing and chilling last night, you were just lonely. That's it. What about me? Nobody cares, but I'm just sitting here with the dog. I'm looking for basketball. I'm looking for hockey. I can't find anything. So I had to go find the tutors, okay? We've got a lot to do on today's program for the big guy, of course. He's feeling himself lately. A lot of positive feedback from the bosses, positive feedback from the cabana party, and the ladies seem to be hollering as well. So big guy really just flying lately. Spencer Aguiar is going to join us. We've got the U.S. Open tomorrow. No John Rahm. Breaking news during the program yesterday. He pulled out because of that pinky toe. 3-1 on Scottie Scheffler. So we'll give you some props, give you some winners. And you know how it works with golf handicapping. Just give out 10 of them. Mike Palm is going to join us as well in studio. Palm versus the big guy. John Mettler coming through with some props for tonight's Game 3. Greg Wyshynski, one of the best to do it when it comes to the puck over at ESPN, is going to join us. We'll talk about tomorrow nights with my Cats and the Edmonton Oilers. You know, the craziest, the biggest story coming out of this series has been the young lady that was doing some flashing in Edmonton, so she's starting to gain some steam. Welcome to 2024. Wyshynski joins, and then Matt Moore. Yeah, I got to be honest with you. This is Matt Moore is one of the best to do it when it comes to basketball. This is a lineup and a half. I mean, you think about it. You start with the kid with the golf. You go Palm, who runs the city. Mettler, who's been crushing it with the props. Wyshynski, the number one guy at ESPN talking puck. And then Matt Moore, that just likes to go inside that periodic table and smack you in the face with some hoops. We're flying today. We start off on a bit of a sad note, as it was announced earlier today that the logo, Jerry West, aged 86, has passed away. 60-plus years in the league, in the association. Now, think about it. This is a league that's about 80 years old. So 60 of those years, Jerry West, one of the greatest to ever play, he was a freaking killer. He said one time, "I don't talk about dogs because I'm a wolf and I eat dogs." Competitive nature, way ahead of his time athletically, one of the great players to ever do it. Coaching briefly, then switched over to the executive role, built a bunch of championships with the Lakers. Help shape the game. This is what you could say about the logo, and that is his likeness when you see the NBA logo, Jerry West. Help shape the game as much as any individual. I think you could argue maybe more than any individual. So as far as a player, a coach, and then an exec, and just a person, an ambassador for the sport for 60-plus years, the NBA certainly lost a legend today. RIP to Jerry West. I didn't see him play. And I'm noticing on Twitter, a lot of people are acting like they were sitting on the wood. You're 22. You weren't there. You weren't. Dustin Sweetelson joins us now. We say hi to the big guy who was really excited because we were having some issues right before the program started. So he was doing one of these, you know, cracking the knuckles, getting ready. He said, looks like I'm starting solo on the show. I got you. And I said, good, go for it. Do what you got to do. But we got it all set up and we're ready to go. And we await Dustin's first words of the day.
The logo. Is that the greatest mic drop nickname of all time? The logo? Like, instead of Google, before people said, Google me, bro, he just said, I'm the logo. That's who I am. Look it up.
Oh, I thought you were going to continue. Yes. But I do like Ice Tray.
It's pretty
and
good.
Red Velvet. my favorite nickname of all time for a multitude of reasons is Kevin Herter. You know, the redheaded donk from Maryland who plays in Sacramento right now. His teammates called him Red Velvet. Silky smooth jumper, red hair,
Ginger.
White guy. Best nickname ever.
Ginger.
All right, let's start over because the logo thing didn't do all it right. for me. Big guy, it's great to see you.
Oh, it's great to see you, too. It's going to be a fun day of figuring out what kind of game the Boston Celtics and Joe Mazzulla are playing. I don't know if he read the book, The Game, but it appears he's trying to manipulate things to get his way today.
Okay, well, are you coming back to me? I was going to take a sip of my tea. We're coming back. Okay,
yeah,
that was a quick one,
see,
too.
See, this
so
is...
You, so what you're telling me is you think there's some gamesmanship with yesterday when Joe Mazzulla said the injury was serious, the day before said he's good to go. It does appear that this is a weird tendon injury with Porzingis, and as batters, nothing matters more than his status. You think we're getting played right now?
I think Joe Mazzulla went from everyone being in his head to now he's in everyone else's head. Because now you're going, wait, Kristaps Porzingis, is he too hurt to play today? Are they going to save him for later? Now we have to dissect the words we got from this organization over 24 hours ago where things flipped and all of a sudden it's, yeah, it's a serious injury. We're going to take it out of his hands. I believe absolutely nothing. I believe absolutely everything. I don't know which way is up. And all I know is no one else has a for sure answer of what's going to happen tonight. I just know desperately we need Kristaps Porzingis to not be in this game.
We know somebody was listening to Joe Rogan on the drive-in. One of these with the conspiracies, the big guy logging some conspiracies. You get, hey, that's a great way to mix up a 3-hour program right in the middle of the week. I love it from you. We're going to hear from Joe Mazzulla coming up in just a bit. Let's focus on a couple of things. One, can you pull up over at DraftKings, the MVP market? Because I want to talk about the ridiculousness of what's happening with Jason Tatum. And this is going to be a fascinating narrative associated with the injury of Porzingis. Tatum has been hiding behind his teammates. The idea, now yesterday, the MVP market had flipped a little bit with Jaylen Brown, who's been the much better player through two games as far as those two superstars in relation to Jason Tatum. I believe when we left yesterday, Jaylen Brown was your favorite in the MVP market. The big guy, he's pulling it up right now. He seems to be frustrated. What's up?
Yeah, my computer logged me out of things. I'll have it for you momentarily.
I can, hey, no big deal, big guy. Don't stress. I got you covered
got
right
it.
Here.
Jaylen Brown is still the favorite at plus 140. Jason Tatum, plus 150. Luka is sitting at 6-1, followed by Drew Holiday at plus 750.
Okay, so the question is, what does Porzingis bring to the Celtics as far as value? They were 30-5 without him in the overall in the 9-1 in the postseason. Here's what you should do. Just get the tape out and watch game one and tell me he doesn't matter. He's the reason the Celtics won game one. He's the reason the Celtics got up to 29, and he was coming off the bench, okay? Because, again, Dallas made a valiant comeback in game one, and then he was the difference and kind of squashing that. Took a timeout, come back, 16-2 run. Good night. See you later. He wasn't as good in game two, but he was still a difference maker because the Celtics have plenty to beat the Mavericks without Porzingis. It's just about the final 5 minutes. And essentially what they've done through games one and two because of the dexterity and what Porzingis brings, like you don't have to be leveled with profundity, big guy, to understand. What he brings to you has precluded Dallas from being in a spot where aside from, you know, the little push from Derek White, the Mavs were never coming back in game two. What we will see
without Porzingis, is this game come down to the final 5 minutes? And then we go back to the original handicap in this series is, do you trust Tatum? Do you trust Brown? Not Holiday's throwing his hat in the mix, but Holiday's better with Porzingis as well. Or are you going to ride with Luka? You're not going to ride with Kyrie. Kyrie is a non-factor in this series. Drew Holiday is his freaking shadow. Okay, because Kyrie, he's shook right now. Maybe he wakes up and becomes what we all believe him to be tonight. But this is a chess game, because with Porzingis, you take away the easy buckets, the easy lobs. With Porzingis, you take away the easy entry into the paint. And we've talked about it ad nauseum. With Porzingis, you don't leave those corner threes alone. And the fascinating part, getting back to where I started, is Jason Tatum. Now, Jason Tatum, if you've noticed, Dallas has been hunting him and forcing him into every action defensively. It's not that he's their worst defender. Drew Holiday's great. Jaylen Brown's better. Derek White on the same level as Tatum, maybe better. It's, I believe, that Dallas has decided Tatum is soft, and that's what I'm just assuming they're projecting. If we hunt him on defense, we get into his head, and it mitigates what he can do offensively. You understand what I'm like? If you constantly work him on defense, and that's the reason they've been trying to get ISOs with Luka and Kyrie and even Gafford. That's the reason they're going after Tatum, because Tatum's just like, dude, I'm supposed to be the star of this series. There's so much pressure, and now you're coming at me on defense. He goes on offense, and he's all over the map. The idea that he's even in the MVP conversation at this point, ludicrous. Move. Get out the way. Little double entendre for the big guy. Come back, more Porzingis next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, Sharp Money is presented by Zyn Nicotine Pouches, America's number one nicotine pouch. Find out more at Zyn.com. Sharp Money here, DraftKings, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It's a Wednesday, hour two, the return of Mike Palm. Circa the D, Golden Gate Casino's VP of Ops. Of course, VSiN host. You can catch him hosting the Lombardi Line Fridays, 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Live bet Saturday, 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And he joins us. Mike, good to see you. What's up?
Hello, Patrick. Hello, Dustin. Nice to see you fellas again. You tell me what's up.
Well, first off, I don't know if you happened to be floating around Stadium Swim last Saturday, but the big guy got himself a cabana and threw a party and had a hell of a time. Did you happen to stop by?
I did not. Was this the end of the challenge? Is that what?
I saw a picture
with you and JVT. I thought this was the final weigh-in.
This is the middle of the trying to sabotage each other in the middle of the weigh-in contest.
You got a Belmont cabana.
What's that? Belmont did happen. I don't remember much.
The reaction we're getting from Dustin was the reaction. I tried to get anecdotes, and all he told me was, "We had a nice time." I mean, yeah, you're on the air. Let's entertain a little bit. There's the picture. The blue skies above the theater there at Stadium Swim. It doesn't get much better than that, Mike Palm.
No, it certainly doesn't. And one of your questions coming up in the debate segment was a terrific question about Stadium Swim. I was stumped by it. I spent several hours on the quiz. It's a very nice setting.
I'm sure you did.
Did you enjoy yourself?
I had a great time. Look.
There you go.
I had a great time. I consumed many beverages. Mm-hmm. I thought the service was impeccable. That's one thing I have to say. Both the waitress and is it called the cabana boy? What's the boy's name?
It's something assistant.
It's a cabana boy. Cabana boy was on top of his game. Every time we walked out of that cabana, we came back in, everything in the room was organized and folded.
What do you think about that outfit from the big guy? He's got the Dikembe Mutombo Nuggets jersey with the lime green bathing suit, Palm.
Well, the jersey is A+. I score that with the
tremendous
rainbow. And yeah, I mean, on the mountains.
That's Pride Month.
I never even thought about that. So A++ for him.
Now, you may have exhausted yourself talking about your experience at the Cubs game, but we have yet to hear about it. So if you wouldn't mind, we'd love to hear about how it went over there with Circa and the Cubs game.
We did. We had a nice trip to Chicago. We got there Thursday afternoon, and we actually got a tour of the United Center. Now, I have never been to a sporting event at the United Center, Patrick. I did attend a Britney Spears concert there, I believe in 2001 was the year, which was really...
Oh, wow.
If you were going to attend one, that would have been the
That's
time frame.
That's the prime.
That would have been the time frame.
Back when she still had control of her trust.
Yeah. I don't know how many times she'd been emancipated at that point. But so we got a nice tour. We got to see the Bulls offices, the Blackhawks offices. And then we had dinner with some of the Blackhawks executives as well. They took us to a nice dinner on Thursday evening and talked about dynamic pricing, some things from the, you know, behind the curtain on business and how you take a franchise with the second lowest points and have the fourth highest revenue. So that was very interesting. And then, of course, Friday was the Cubs game. And, you know, we pre-gamed at Murphy's Bleachers. We had the private room upstairs. And, you know, we had the run of the land. We had access to both 670, the score, their booth, and then the marquee booth during the game. But, you know, we were supposed to do the fourth inning, Derek and I. And Mitch Rosen from 670 took us up there, like, at the end of the first. And we had actually run into Ron Coomer, who I hadn't met before, the color commentator for radio for the Cubs, who had played for the Cubs shortly, but had a 14-year career, you know, in the Mets. I mean, he's almost a .280 lifetime hitter, and was a really nice guy. Anyhow, we went up there with Pat Hughes and Ron, and like chit-chatted with them during the second inning, and then Pat said, "Ah, let's just do the third inning." And so, you know. We got to be there and call the third inning. It was really tremendous. I had a lot of emotions, of course. Been there many times with my dad, and to think hopefully he was looking down and to be able to see that. The Reds booth was right next to us. Jeff Brantley was on the call there. So it was terrific. And then they sent us clips. You know, Pat and Ron were talking about Derek and I well after we were out of there in the fourth inning, the sixth inning, and the eighth inning and all that. And then Tuesday of the next week, I'm sitting at home, and there's a picture from the two of them, Pat and Ron, in the booth when they're about to start the White Sox game on Tuesday. They said, "Where are you guys? We need you." You know, so it was really nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. That's tremendous. What did they say? Just that they had a nice time with you guys in the
real,
booth?
Real good Midwest guys. Great to be our sponsor. Big diehard baseball fans, and it was such a pleasure, you know, to meet us and people that had real knowledge of the game and appreciated the opportunity that we got.
Well, and they needed you to come back and entertain because they were stuck watching the White Sox play baseball.
Oh, God, are they awful. Every night a two-run lead they blow. I just wait till they're up two and bet against them.
I just know every night their announcer's on the air going, "Tomorrow's going to be the day, guys.
Oh,
tomorrow we're going to win."
Shriffin is an embarrassment.
The inning itself, give me a time frame. How many batters you get in? How long did it last? Give us something.
Well, unfortunately, there was a double play that shortened our time there in the booth. But it was probably, I would say, combined just a little bit less than 20 minutes from the first pitch in the top of the third to the final pitch in the bottom. It was a good game that went back and forth. Eventually, Smiley came in and gave up a home run, and the Reds won the game. There was drama in the ninth. They got the runner thrown out at the plate. I don't know why he ever sent him. But it was a tremendous game. And those 1:20 Central Time starts at Wrigley on Fridays, I mean, what a party atmosphere that is. It's just a heck of a good time. And they've done such a nice job, the Ricketts, buying up all that property around Wrigley. You wouldn't recognize it if you went there 10 years ago. You wouldn't recognize Wrigley, and you wouldn't recognize the neighborhood.
That's the thing about Wrigley and Fenway. It's just done. Forget the actual parks. Just the experience, all-encompassing, of what it means to go to a game. That's what feels right about it, right? Just like, it's not in a parking lot like Philadelphia where you have to drive to it. There's nothing around. Like, the idea of ingratiating and kind of combining the city with the baseball, that's to me is the perfect feel.
Yeah, I mean, it's in a residential neighborhood, right? There's houses right there. You're parking in people's yards. You got a bar. They built this beautiful hotel right across the street. I mean, my room looked out. I could throw a stone and hit the Wrigley Field sign. This tremendous hotel, Zachary, there that they built across from the ballpark. If you have a chance to go there, I think Mitch Moss and some friends are going in July to see the Brewers play at Wrigley. I said, if you can book a room there, I know it might be a little pricey depending on the event. We stayed there the first time when Iowa played Northwestern at Wrigley, but it's well worth it, and the experience is tremendous.
You been to Wrigley?
No, I was going to say, it's one of the few old ones left. Obviously, Wrigley, Fenway, Dodger, those are the old ones. I've been to Dodger. I haven't been to the other two. When you talk about all the other stadiums, Mike, that you've been to, some of the new age ones, Wrigley still up there for you in the top three for you, three or four
he
stadiums?
He loves Petco. Petco's right up there.
Wrigley's third or fourth. Petco's number one, Patrick. I'll tell you a ballpark. Maybe it's not underrated, but you wouldn't think of it. Pittsburgh, PNC.
No, that's the.
Yeah,
Petco,
people say that.
Those are the top two that I hear over and over.
PNC is unreal. And then I like the one in Seattle as well. It used to be Safeco. Who knows what the sponsor is now? I had a great time a couple times going to Seattle as well. And Wrigley's different, right? But that vibe, like. The afternoon games at Wrigley compares to, like, the gas lamp district in San Diego. Yeah. It's that vibe. Yep.
What Patrick said before, they're both built into a cityscape. Yeah. Baltimore built into a city. I can't stand the idea of, like, Philadelphia, where they've got these arenas and stadiums in a parking lot to just tailgate.
Across from the river and the interstates.
It's the opposite of what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to have a community here around the teams, and, like, we lose all of that because it's more efficient and convenient to go build a parking lot with arenas.
My sister lived in Wrigleyville for a while, and she had a condo there. So the experience of walking from her condo to the park, starting with the pregames, and then walking back and walking into, like, a bar that was obviously from the 20s and with a fireplace. Yep. It was just, I don't know. That experience is just the best. That's when baseball, you guys can argue it, and I know, Mike, you like hockey in person, but just the experience of going to a baseball game, it's really nothing better than it.
The difference is a baseball game can be a full day, right? Because you pregame, you can get there for batting practice, autographs are accessible, you can get down to the field, especially if young kids, they want to try and meet their favorite player, yell for an autograph or whatever. Then you watch the game, then you go hit the bars after. It is a full day, a baseball game versus the others, where I think it's you show up and you go.
It's the best. My experience, the player that threw me a ball, Dave Stewart. Upper deck, Tiger Stadium, old Tiger Stadium, screaming at Dave Stewart. The guy terrified me. He was scary. He pointed at my dad, launched a ball up to us perfectly. My dad caught it, handed it to me. It's not bad, boys. Brothers were down there, too.
Shattered. He threw it into the upper deck?
Yeah. Literally. I think they do it for fun.
To see
if they can do it.
Yeah.
So he heard me yelling, pointed to my dad because I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I was down there. You got the steroid brothers down there, too, with your boy Canseco and McGuire.
I had two.
How about seeing Jim Rice hit a bomb in Tiger Stadium for the Red Sox there, Palm? That's not bad. Jim Rice.
Kirk Gibson with that homer in game one of the 88 World Series stole the win from Dave Stewart.
What he was doing. Right? Yeah. He was doing this right around
starting a boat engine.
Never to be seen again that year.
Kirk getting, exactly. And Lasorda coming out. Gibson, by the way.
Joey Amalfitano.
That's right. That Gibson was a better football player at Michigan State than he was a baseball player. Kirk Gibson, one of the greats. All right. You wait for it all week. Palm's got a big lead. Let's see if the big guy can step it up. Palm versus the big guy next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Presented by Zyn Nicotine Pouches, America's number one nicotine pouch. You can find out more at Zyn.com. So Dustin just passed along the word, If you're looking for an angle here, Game 3, Stanley Cup Final. Of course, the Panthers up 2-0 against the Oilers. We'll switch to Edmonton from north of Miami. Now, much has been made about the travel because it's the furthest distance teams have had to travel in the Stanley Cup Final. And Dustin just told me that Florida, the Panthers are actually having delayed issues. So they were supposed to get there earlier, but the Panthers are having issues with getting to Edmonton. Use that information how you will. Okay, I do think we have our buddy Greg Wyshynski. He's ESPN's senior NHL writer. You can find Greg on Twitter at Wyshynski. Of course, the podcast, The Drop, on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. We say hi to Greg. Greg, thank you for joining us. So much has been made about the travel in this series. Of course, the longest distance. We just heard word that Florida having trouble, so they're delayed getting into Edmonton. My assumption is you're in Edmonton. Can you tell us about the travel from Florida to Edmonton?
Yeah, the travel was fine for those of us who actually left when we should have, which is yesterday. I don't know what was going on with the Panthers thinking about trying to leave today, because honestly, everyone knew the weather was going to be even worse today than it was yesterday in Fort Lauderdale. I mean, everybody was aware of it. So the fact that they've had this flight delay is entirely predictable. I did hear they finally have taken off and are expected to get into Edmonton, I think, within the 8 o'clock hour local time. Keep in mind, there is a time zone shift for them as well. So this is really going to, you know, potentially throw them off their routine a bit, having to come in a little bit later than expected. We're still waiting here at the arena to find out if they're going to hop by and do some media before they tuck in their beds for the night. But certainly not the smoothest of sailing going from Florida to Edmonton for Game 3.
Yeah, we're always looking, as bettors, we're always looking for that break of routine. So certainly something to that. On television, these barns, like every time I'm watching a hockey game, the crowds just pop. However, there obviously is a lineage difference with Edmonton and then north of Miami where the Florida Panthers play. What was it like down in Florida as far as the atmosphere there?
It was cool. I mean, that's a fan base that's really matured a bit in the last couple of seasons. Obviously, as a team gets good and consistently good, the fan base is going to grow. I think also I've often said that the best way to grow fans in the NHL is to live and die with your team in the playoffs. And obviously, you know, the hunger left over from falling short in the Stanley Cup final last year only made the fans even more rabid. I've covered the Panthers for a long time. I can say without question, there are more Panthers fans now than there ever been. There's more market penetration than there's ever been insofar as seeing Panthers flags and t-shirts and stuff all over the place. And they even have their own practice facility now with a team store and everything too. So it was pretty loud and pretty energetic, but I don't think it'll compare to the chaos that we're going to feel in Game 3 as the Oilers return home with what is without question their last stand in this series.
Yeah, in a historic franchise, down 0-2 in the series. Let's start there, Greg. Greg Wyshynski, ESPN senior NHL writer. Let's start from the Edmonton perspective. They're down in the series. What can they do to right this ship in Game 3?
Well, there's a couple things that will happen right off the bat, which is that they're going to be able to get the matchups that they want at 5-on-5. The home team in the NHL gets the last line change. That's really good news for Connor McDavid. It's no secret that McDavid has seen copious amounts of Alexander Barkov in this series. Barkov's played extraordinarily well. He's the best defensive forward in the league. And McDavid doesn't have a goal yet. One of the things they're going to be able to do here in Edmonton is hopefully get matchups for the McDavid line with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Zach Hyman against lines that don't involve Sasha Barkov. So that's one huge advantage. The second thing is they're going to have to figure out a way to break through on the power play. And that's easier said than done because the Florida Panthers have a dynamic penalty kill. They have not allowed a goal in 7 opportunities against Edmonton in this series. They've actually not allowed a goal against the Edmonton power play in the entire season. They're coming off a series against the New York Rangers in which they killed 14 of 15 power play opportunities against what's considered to be the second best power play in the league besides Edmonton. And so, you know, the Oilers live and die with their power play. They thrive off it and the energy that they get that it gives them. And McDavid talked today about trying to play maybe a little bit more road hockey, maybe a little bit more like we're playing five on five versus a structured power play. They need to figure out a way to break through on that, or else it's going to be hard for them to score in this series.
Let's go to the goalies. Bobrovsky has been awesome, and that's not all routine saves, right? He's been awesome. And I thought Stuart Skinner was great in the Dallas series. He probably wanted a couple, maybe that game-tying goal back in game two. Do you consider this to be a major edge moving forward for Bobrovsky?
I think only yes, only because it's starting to get in that impenetrable zone for Bob. Like, he gave up a stoppable goal to Matthias Ekholm in game two, ended up not hurting the Panthers, who go on to win the game. But it was the first time that he had been beaten through the five hole between his legs in the entire postseason. That's how good he's been down low. It's clearly an advantage for Florida in the series. I think we all anticipated that. But, you know, if you told me that Edmonton was down 0-2 in a Stanley Cup final and you couldn't blame either loss on Stuart Skinner, I think you take that every day of the week. And you're right, since it goes back to the benching that he had in the Vancouver series. He's been really, really solid since then, and really kind of one of the least of their concerns, which is good news for Edmonton.
It was an up and down game. It looked like it's starting to get chippy with Draisaitl and others. Like, I would imagine game three, specifically with that pressure cooker there in Edmonton, like, this 5.5 is the total. I guess I'm asking because we're talking from a betting perspective. I don't expect a breakout of many goals. Would you?
I don't. And you know, the total was 5.5 on game two as well, and fell just short of it. I thought there was a chance that if we had gotten an Oilers empty netter, we could have gotten over the total with another, with their net empty rather, then we could have gotten over the total of the Florida empty netter. I think I could see the same scenario playing out where it's just tight at the end and maybe an empty net goal, you know, tips it over the total. But no, I don't think we're going to see an offensive bonanza unless the processes of the Florida Panthers have been scrambled so mightily by this travel delay that they're completely off their game. They're just too good defensively right now. They're locked down. They're playing aggressive. It brings me back to covering them against the Rangers. And I remember Mika Zibanejad from the Rangers saying in that series, they're so good defensively that they make you get like conservative brain. You know, that you're not taking the same chances you usually take because you're so afraid of making a turnover because you know they're going to be right on it and pounce on it. So when they're this locked in defensively and Bobrovsky is playing as well as he is, it's hard to imagine that we're going to see, you know, fire wagon hockey in game three.
Greg, I'm fascinated by cities for some reason. What's Edmonton like? Is the barn like? Is the stadium built into the downtown? Could you compare Edmonton to an American city? What's the vibe there in Edmonton?
Well, you're asking the wrong guy because this is only my second time here. It's funny, the only other time I've been in Edmonton, it was for McDavid's first home game 9 years ago. Oh. So it's a real full circle moment for me. And since then, you know, they've built an arena. They built up a whole downtown area. You know, the arena is downtown. The atmosphere around the games are incredible. They bring out, you know, a huge crowd of fans to watch the game on screens outside the arena. It's very energetic. The town comes alive without question when the Oilers play. But from a city perspective, I flew in last night and I'm walking around this morning and it kind of gives me a little St. Louis vibe, I'd say. You know, there's a river, there's a, you know, it's a little wear and tear, a little dicey at night. Arenas in the downtown area where people don't necessarily hang out. It sort of reminds me a little bit of St. Louis, if I had to make an example, a comparison.
I like that. St. Louis is a good. It's weird because Canada, I've been to Toronto. Vancouver looks like it's like European. Like, it's just like so, you know,
Montreal,
majestic
well,
looking.
Yeah.
Montreal, yeah, old and just cool. Okay, do 2 minutes. Would you expect the Oilers to pick up the W here? They got the line shift. They're a $1.35 favorite tomorrow night.
Well, I picked them in six. So the math still checks out that it can win in six, but I have my doubts. I mean, look, I think they could win game three. It really is backs against the wall. And as McDavid pointed out today, I mean, there have been other times in these playoffs and certainly in the regular season when they've been completely written off and then come back and and won a game. It's hard to imagine them getting beaten in four straight, and especially when you consider the matchup advantages they'll have in this game in particular with getting their guys out away from the best defensive players on Florida. So I'm optimistic that they can make this a series and win game three. But the other part about it, too, and this is kind of the bottom line for me, is that Edmonton played great game one. They regressed in game two. Florida did not play a great game one, and they were like 10 times better in game two. And on top of that, we're also dealing with some injuries on the Edmonton side. Evander Kane might not play. He's been hindered by a sports hernia. He has one assist in nine games. Darnell Nurse is coming off an injury in game three, game two. He's going to play in game three. So we're also seeing kind of Florida really showing some, Edmonton showing some battle damage right now against Florida too. And that's not a good sign.
Awesome. Greg Wyshynski, that was great. ESPN senior NHL writer at Wyshynski on Twitter, the podcast, The Drop on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. Enjoy Edmonton and thank you for the time. Appreciate it.
I shall. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Thank you very much. Greg Wyshynski did a good job there. The big guy. He liked that conversation. You can tell. I can see the big guy when I'm talking to the guests, and sometimes he'll get a little smile on his face. He was happy during that conversation. Either that or somebody provided waters. I'm going to come back with some baseball plays next.
Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, become a VSiN Pro with the spring special. You get 13 months for $199, so a free month, and you save $41. You can sign up, VSiN.com/subscribe. Get the picks, get the splits, get the guides, get everything we offer. Use the promo code SHARP to unlock the deal, VSiN.com/subscribe. Okay, we welcome you back here. Sharp Money presented by Zinn. Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. We have a few for years now. We've got a short list of guests that we don't bother unless we need them. We bring in the big guns, and that is Matt Moore when it comes to the NBA, because the Porzingis thing has thrown a wrench into game three. The Action Network NBA writer at HP Basketball, he's the best. He's Matt Moore. You can check out the podcast Locked On NBA, Locked On Nuggets. Progressive Guest Line brings you Mr. Moore. Matt, nice to speak with you. Let's start here. If Porzingis doesn't play, what does that provide as far as an opportunity for the Mavs?
Well, I mean, it's going to make, you know, it'll help, especially I think on the offensive end, actually, because it gives you more opportunity to kind of target Al Horford. Now, they've struggled with that. Luka's settled mostly for step-back jump shots, but with Al Horford in instead, that gives you the opportunity to maybe attack a little bit more and force some of that help, which will free up the shooters on the outside, which is what the Mavericks really need. That can get Kyrie Irving going. You know, just these little things that can really help in this kind of situation. I think, you know, for Boston, he's dominated all of his matchups on switches, so that's helpful too. Where on the offensive side for Boston, he's had a big impact in the series as well. He's been huge on both ends. They play great defense and great offense when Porzingis has been on the floor. They've played okay offense and okay defense when he's been on the bench. They are a net zero when he is on the bench. They haven't lost his minutes, the minutes when he's been on the bench. They haven't won them either. So that opens up the opportunity. It also means they might have to go smaller. It means maybe more minutes for Luke Kornet, right? Or you're trying to get by with Jason Tatum at five, and then you can hit the offensive glass. So there's a lot of like cascading effects if Porzingis is not able to go, or what I think is more likely, which is he tries to go and just isn't able to keep up and then probably has to get pulled and we don't see him the rest of the game.
So at HP Basketball, this is a Hall of Fame tweet, and I think it sums it up perfectly. Matt Moore tweeted, "The one thing I feel most confident in is that the stuff that they said today isn't accurate. It's either way worse than day-to-day or way better than serious injury." So you do feel as though maybe the Celtics playing a little gamesmanship with the injury.
Yeah, that was definitely a sense I got from talking to Boston folks. It's just like the idea of, you know... there's a lot of the stuff that goes on anytime there's an opportunity. And we heard for 2 days about like, oh, Luka Doncic is questionable. Oh, and oh, he's the injection, all these things. And I think Luka's banged up. He's been banged up all playoffs. I think he's dealing with injuries. But like, we heard all about that. And then like, oh, Luka Doncic dropped a 30-point triple-double. Huh, that's weird. And sometimes these teams do that where they kind of fire back the other direction. On the other hand, you know, it does sound from every indication of like how the injury is described, sounds pretty significant, where it's a band that holds a bunch of things together in your leg. And without it, that stuff starts to like fall down. That sounds bad. And so when you've got Joe Mazzulla saying, well, it's a serious injury. And then also, yeah, he's day to day. Okay. Well, which is it? He suffered a serious injury or he's day to day, because it's not really going to be both. And the only real way that we'll know is to find out tonight. Like, that's been kind of my thing. Is I just think we're going to have to see it. We're not, I think trying to guess which way this goes, I think is bad. I think if you like Dallas with Porzingis, you should like them even more right now. And if you like Boston with Porzingis, honestly, I think there's a pretty good chance that you're going to be okay as well. I'm not saying to ignore the Porzingis factor, but just to acknowledge that we don't really know what we're going to see tonight.
Yeah, the games jumped up to 3. So as you know, Matt, it opened Celtics 1, immediately got hit to Mavs lane 1, and then got bet up to 1.5, up to 2, came back down to 1.5, now up to 3. So it feels like a little bit of hedging, whether or not he plays, whether he doesn't, 213.5 on the total. Let me ask you about Kyrie. Is it simply just how marvelous Drew Holiday has been, or do you see something else in Kyrie Irving's game right now?
You know, I'll say I think he was not himself in Boston. The crowd got to him. I think he missed shots that he could normally make. I do think that he got blocked by like Porzingis got him, but like also Al Horford blocked him twice. You know, Derek White obviously had the big block on him. Like, guys that shouldn't be able to get his shot blocked are blocking him, and he'll probably adjust to those in game 3. A lot of this is just, you know, when it's like, well, Kyrie's really struggling, and I'm like, how do you tell? Like, how, this is his normal shot diet that goes in or it doesn't. And so I don't really have, like, I don't think that there's much that Boston's played good defense on him, but Kyrie's a tough shot maker. That's what he does. He's either going to make him or he's not. And so from that perspective, I think maybe this is an opportunity for him to kind of just settle in and get back into it. The only other thing I do think is I think that they'll probably find some different mechanisms to get him involved to try and get his game going. I expect to see that tonight. It's one of the reasons why I like the over.
So Kyrie's 23.5 as far as his player prop. I'm just going to give you a number on a player and tell me what you expect from him tonight as far as usage. PJ Washington's 14.5 on player points. What are your expectations for how PJ is used tonight?
Yeah, I like the over there. You know, he's had a lot of good opportunities, and he's the guy that I think has had the most open kind of 3-point opportunities beyond Derrick Jones Jr., who I think plays less tonight. I think maybe we see more Dante Exum. Washington will play the same amount, and not only has he hit threes, but he's also been able to get to the rim. PJ's got a little bit more balance to his game. He's got a little bit more of a well-rounded game. So Washington, I do kind of think, is going to play about the same level of impact that he did in the first two games. But he's, I think, settling in and probably going to play better as the series goes along rather than worse. He I think, is a good target spot. A good example of, if you believe, like, well, they're going home, it's a must-win situation, the role players play better at home, P.J. Washington is the exact type of guy that could have a game that impacts things and helps the Mavs get to 2-1.
Jaylen's one plus 140, so this is MVP. Tatum plus 150. Okay. Luka's 6-1. Drew Holiday's 7.5-1, and then Kristaps 40-1. Forget the numbers. Who's been the best player through two games?
Ooh. Okay. So the best player has been Drew Holiday. But the best bet for MVP, I think, is Jaylen Brown. I think Drew's had the most impact because he's been given the biggest opportunity, and he's made the most of it, right? Like, Derrick Jones Jr. has had lots of opportunity, hasn't done anything. PJ Washington's had opportunity. Kyrie's had opportunity, hasn't done enough. Jaylen Brown, I think, is in a great spot here where I think Jaylen continues to get really good looks based off of the way that the Mavs are defending, and has already put himself in position to be the favorite after he was still a dog early after game two, which I thought was crazy. Like a big, yeah. He should have been the favorite pretty much after game two. Drew, I think, is one where, like, yes, he's been amazing, but the things that Drew does, those are stuff that the Mavs can very easily clean up. Like, they can shut that water off pretty easy. It's harder, I think, to shut off the water on Jaylen Brown. And that's why I think the best value is on Jaylen Brown here at this number, because they're still kind of a, well, yeah, but Tatum. And I'm like, I don't know, guys. Like, he's shooting 30%. He's on track for the worst shooting performance on volume in finals history. That's going to be hard, I think, for the voters to forget. The signature moment, the big block in game one, that was Jaylen. Honestly, in the last game, like, kind of a clinching layup, Jaylen Brown. He's had all these moments on top of the scoring production. So I think Jaylen Brown is the best bet to win finals MVP. But I think Drew Holiday has had the biggest impact for Boston in the series.
That's a great answer. I hate to sound square on this, but Brown's number is set at 23.5 on points tonight. Like, he had 21 in game two, and I felt like he could have been more aggressive. Am I missing something there?
No. You know, I think a lot of it depends on, okay, Dallas has thrown multiple levels of defense at Jason Tatum. They have said, we're going to keep throwing all these levels of defense at Jason Tatum. Did they rebalance here? Did they try and reconfigure? You know, Derek Jones Jr. was asked about that this week here in Dallas, and he said, well, no, we just want to do that to everybody. And that's one of those answers where I kind of like give him the Justin Timberlake, really? Really? Because no, they're not playing anybody else the same way. So, yeah, I think as long as they don't rebalance their defense, Jaylen Brown's still going to have a lot of opportunities offensively, and maybe even more if Kristaps Porzingis is limited or can't play.
Are you going to the game? Are you in Dallas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm here for games 3 and 4. So heading to the arena here right after I get done with you.
Awesome. Well, enjoy the game. Matt Moore, Action Network, NBA writers, the best at HP Basketball. Thanks for the time. Enjoy the basketball, Matt.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Okay. Thank you. He's the best. We got to come back and talk about some of this. 23 now. Here's the thing. Brown took 15 shots in game two, and the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, I think Tatum took 22 shots. I'm like, those shots should be Brown shots. I have so much more confidence in Jaylen Brown right now. And I know you got a couple of futures as well. We'll come back and get them with the family plays.